All right. Channel 9 Live, PDC, Dave Campbell, Technical Fellow. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
So you work on SQL Azure. Talk to us about what you talked about today.
Okay. Yeah. So SQL Azure is kind of interesting. It's been an interesting ride. We started this project internally called CloudDB several years back. And I don't know if people know, but we've been running the live properties, Hotmail, the address book, Messenger address book, and that sort of stuff, on SQL Server at Microsoft for a long, long time.
Sure.
And the live team had figured out how to make use of it at that scale. And so we started building this CloudDB thing, you know, as the SQL team learned what it meant to operate at cloud scale, if you will. And then last year when we came here, we had a REST-based interface, and that was the only way you could communicate to this underlying store.
Okay.
And right after PDC, we said, you know, okay, people really want to be able to use Transact SQL. They want their stored procedures, they want the tooling they have, they want to be able to use the skills they have right now. So we actually made a shift. And what was amazing about this year in SQL Azure is we started out right after PDC, made the decision, and the team was in this point right at the beginning of the year, like, I don't know if we could do all this and get it ready for PDC 09. And what was stunning was to watch the team go through this over the course of the year. There was some time in August where I was walking up and down the hallway, and the team, people on the team, they were just floating, like 2 feet off the ground. They knew they were going to make it.
Nice.
So they switched this thing all over. So now SQL Azure is truly database as a service, running over hundreds and thousands of nodes, data centers around the globe. And it's lights out. It's pretty amazing.
It is amazing. So let's talk a little bit about, reflect a little bit on what it means to take, SQL Server and cloudify it, if you will.
Cloudify it. Yeah.
I mean, what exactly is going on?
Great question. Part of the challenge in this is that we want to separate logical and physical administration. And part of the challenge in doing that, I'll describe what that is and then describe the challenge in it. So the idea is that the logical administration actually has something to do with the application. What is the data model? How do I want to represent it? And that's all about, creating the tables, creating the indexes, the things you need to back the solution. Then there's the physical administration, which is, okay, how much room do I have in my transaction log disk? How much, managing the storage itself? And for some time, the SQL Server team has been trying to make it easier to do the physical administration. But the thing that we achieve with SQL Azure is a separation of physical and logical. You don't have to find a server. You don't need to find the disks. You just say, hey, I want a database. Huh. And you get back a connection string to the database, and away you go. But part of the challenge in doing this fully is the SQL language itself. So the example I use is the create database statement. And on the front end of it, it's all logical. Create database foo, and then I'm going to stick some tables in it. So it's just a container for the schema. But if you keep walking through the syntax tree, you get down the other end, and it's like, oh, by the way, please put the transaction log on the F drive on here. Well, there's no F drive in the cloud, right? So we've had to figure out how we tease those things apart.
Absolutely. I mean, how do you tease those things apart?
Well, most of them, we can separate the logical constructs.
Sure.
Things like the create database statement, we actually think about, okay, which things can we just ignore? Because in the context of the cloud, it doesn't make any sense. So if someone were to try to specify, look, I want the transaction log file on the F drive, can we just say, we're taking care of the transaction log for you? But the idea is to make it as seamless as possible so you can port applications very, very quickly.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
So just for everybody in the audience, ask some questions. We're with Technical Fellow Dave Campbell, Channel 9 Live, PDC, Twitter. So I wanted to ask them to ask questions.
Okay.
And I will use the sign to make it explicitly clear.
Very cool. That does it.
Totally. Well, that's a really interesting, we really want to
is
engage
that really
with
working?
The world.
Well,
this actually is how you Twitter.
I see.
You say, I just learned how to Twitter recently myself.
Yes, so am I.
At CH9Live means target this question towards this Twitter, tweeter.
I'm like an aerosol guy in a speed stick world, so I've just becoming used to Twitter myself.
So let's get a little, not philosophical, but let's get a little broad here. So what are the benefits of a relational database model these days?
Ah, that's a good question. The relational database model has stood the test of time. And it's interesting in that there's this anti-SQL movement, if you will. Some people follow that. And the challenge here is you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Mm. People think of a lot of things when they think of the SQL model. But the data model itself and the ability to query literally has stood the test of time. And I've been doing this database stuff for over 20 years, and I remember hearing that the object databases were going to wipe out the SQL databases.
Sure.
And then, little less than 10 years ago, it was the XML databases were going to wipe out. We actually had, people inside Microsoft, well, let's stop working on SQL Server, let's go build a native XML store, because in 5 years it's all going to be. And the thing that's happened, honestly, is that the relational databases have evolved. So now SQL Server supports XML natively and such.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people in this anti-SQL movement, they're really looking for the cloud benefits. Okay, and the thing that we're trying to achieve with SQL Azure is to give you the cloud benefits, but not throw out the model that has worked for so long and what people are familiar with. So try to retain the best of both worlds.
Excellent. So we have some questions. Mark Kitts, how soon will I be able to release my Visual Studio 2010 killer app on Azure and start making my internet millions?
Ah, that's a good question. So as Ray announced this morning, we now have several customers who are going live in production. And for general folks, it's February 1st is the day. And SQL Azure will be ready to store your data then.
That's awesome.
Yep. In fact, let me just mention this. We're using the underlying engine of SQL Azure to power some other services at Microsoft. So one question that comes up an awful lot is, why this 10 gigabyte limit, the 1 in 10 gigabyte?
Yeah,
okay,
why?
So you were going to ask me that later.
I was.
Okay, well, I'll tell you now. The thing here is that we can use this infrastructure to do one of two things. We can either host very large databases, which is what we're doing in one configuration. We have a service that we're offering, Exchange Hosted Archive, which uses the underlying engine from SQL Azure. And we receive over a half a terabyte of data a day on that. And that's over a very large cluster. And so that's one way that we're using it.
Okay.
The other way we can use the same infrastructure is to have many, many smaller databases. And the reason we went with 1 in 10 gigabytes this year is that we really want to get those applications that aren't huge. Like when you get into 200, 500 gigabyte databases, there's some physical tuning. People have to tweak the indexes. The tables get very, very large. So what we want to do is provide the size at which people can walk up this year, have a very good experience, and we're not going to get overwhelmed in terms of how to automate that for them. So there's no technical limit for the 1 in 10 gigabyte, and we'll lift that over time.
Okay.
But it's something that we felt comfortable that we want this to be hands-off and lights-out from our perspective. We felt comfortable at that level for our first offering.
Excellent. Jamie T., is Dallas data hosted on Azure, SQL Azure, either or neither?
Dallas data is hosted on both.
Okay.
So in the example I showed today, and actually it could be hosted elsewhere as well, I'll describe it. The Mars rover example today that we showed in the keynote has the structured data stored in SQL Azure. The blobs, the images themselves, are stored in Windows Azure Storage.
Okay.
And we also have another arrangement whereby Dallas can front services where the data is actually stored somewhere else. So you can get that consistent service experience. But for whether it's a real-time sort of feed, like the news feed or something
Absolutely.
Like that, or some other data sets that might be fairly cold and held somewhere else, we can do that through Dallas as well.
Excellent. So we have a few questions about Dallas. So before we get to those, I just want you to go over and talk a little bit about what Dallas is for those in the audience who may not know.
So Dallas is a really interesting service. And one of the things that we had looked at earlier was, as I say, I started this, when I started thinking about this cloud space several years ago, I was thinking of it as a constant sum sort of game. Like someone's either going to deploy a database on premises or they're going to deploy a database in the cloud. And I quickly realized that one of the advantages of the cloud was to actually have new scenarios that really couldn't be served one place or another.
Mm.
So the team started to look at how can we reduce friction? Because one of the interesting things about the cloud is it's anyone can get to the cloud. Whether you're behind the firewall, it's a lot easier to get out. It's hard to get back in the other way, and it's hard to connect things this way.
Sure.
And so we started to look at these scenarios, and the sort of mind frame, the mindset we had was, how can we wring friction out of some of these scenarios such that it actually changes the scenario? And the example I used this morning is like trying to describe a DVR to someone who has a VCR. It's like you can wave your arms, you can say this, but you just show them, and they're like, oh, I get it. So Dallas is the same sort of thing. The idea is, there's a lot of data out there. It's easy to acquire data. It's easy to store the data. But how does someone find it? How do they discover it? How do they explore it? And the exploration part is getting your hands into it, make meaning of it, really understand what's in the data, what's in the model, what's in the instance data itself.
Excellent.
And then how do you use it in your application? So Dallas is all about discovery, exploring, and using, and just wringing friction out of it to completely change the experience.
Awesome. So some more Dallas questions. Is Dallas okay for worldwide use?
Yep. So Dallas would be, the Dallas data is, you know, many different forms of data in it. So public data, commercial data, and so in the public data sets, those will be available all over the place. The commercial data sets will have terms of use that are set by the commercial data providers.
Okay.
And so in as much as they're okay with it being consumed elsewhere. And actually there's another aspect, sort of a technical aspect. One of the things that we're thinking about as a service is the ability to geolocate data. So you can imagine whether it's for an internal corporation that spans the globe or for others, there's a lot of structured data catalogs and such where I may want to replicate it around the globe such that I have low latency access from many, many points around the globe. So I think there's some things there as well.
Excellent. And are compilers, databases, and operating systems merging? Link, F-sharp, garbage collection?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think they are coming together. And there's been some magic. You know, as we've wired things together over the decades, we've got a lot of friction and impedance mismatches between various layers. And if you think about just programming languages and queries, so it used to be the case that whether it was embedded SQL or a call-level API like ODBC, you had one experience inside the development environment and then a completely different experience in the back end. And how do we bring those things together? And Link is a great example of being able to bring those worlds together and the ability to take the standard query operators and apply them to relational data, to apply them to objects, you know, within my application, to apply them to XML, has really brought sort of this unified surface over the top. So I think just as we evolve as technologists, we're learning how to reduce the friction and bring these things together. There's one other thing I'll mention is that with SQL Server 2005, we actually took the CLR and placed it in SQL Server. And that freaked a lot of people out.
Oh, it
right?
did.
But one of the amazing things about it is it allows you to get computation very close to the data.
Okay.
So we have scenarios. There's a bioinformatics company that instead of doing things in the mid-tier, they actually turned things around and took the computation right into the next to the data. Mm. And they got a speed up, I think, of like 100x. By being able to run the computation right next to the data. And, you know, we'll see that sort of play out going forward as well.
So, of course, how does that manifest itself in SQL Azure when you take that, when you have, like, incredible computation, compute mm-hmm. power? How do you guys play that game in
that
world?
That's a great question. So we see these petabyte scale sort of data challenges, okay? Mm. And I think it's, if you go back 40 years ago, just getting data in a digital form was a challenge. And we paid people to type it into digital form, right? Mm. And now the thing that stuns me is inherently analog things like photographs and voice, like you call someone on your cell phone, it's being transformed into digital form to go across. So everything is born digital these days. And the question is, you know, how can I process it where it lands in an interesting scale?
So sure.
This whole notion of scaling things out, running things out across large, large numbers of machines is transformative. So this example I used with Exchange Hosted Archive, we have a solution it was built on which basically placed a tenant, if you will, kind of in a single SQL server with its instance. What we've done with the EHA, the new system, is we've sharded the data over hundreds and hundreds of machines. And we can take queries that used to take 20 minutes or more mm-hmm. And now run them in less than 10 seconds
Amazing.
On this new thing, just because we're executing that query across hundreds of machines simultaneously.
Amazing. So we have some more questions. Thank you. Just curious, how was such a cool name as Azure coined?
Oh, I think there was this big smoke-filled room last year, and that's a good question to ask Ray.
Yeah, maybe we should save that one for Ray. That's
yeah,
a good point.
I would. Yeah, put that one in the queue.
So what about, this might not also be applicable to you, Azure pricing, and what about one user application? Can it benefit from using Azure?
Okay, so here's, I'm not going to go into the pricing details because
sure.
I'm a
I know.
Technical
this,
guy.
Again, he's a technical fellow.
So one thing I do want to, this is a great question. Yeah. I'm going to, like a politician, I'm going to use that question to answer something different that
Perfect.
I'd like to talk about.
So, perfect.
The difference between servers and services. Okay, so another company made some noise, tried to make some noise in front of our noise a week or two ago by announcing what they were calling a relational database service.
Yes.
Well, all they did is they took a relational database server and they stuck it in a VM. Okay, so you still have to buy the VM.
Okay.
So if you've got a very small database and you want to run it for a month, you're paying like 11 cents an hour. So the smallest database you get up there is like you're approaching $100 a month just to have it, because you need to rent the whole infrastructure to go off and do that.
I see.
To do things in the large with services allows us to do more fine-grain allocation of resources such that it costs us much, much less to run them. And in turn, we can pass that cost on to people. So our cost of SQL Azure in the 1 gigabyte database is about 1/10 of what you could do in the other thing that was recently announced for a database
From
some other company.
That's really interesting. But again, it goes into what you were talking about earlier. What you have built is essentially this distributed data service where I send up, hey, create me a database, run some computations, and it's you take care of all the underlying
The cool thing about it is like machines fail and disks fail all the time, right? So I tell people that if something fails, no one's pager goes off. The only time we have to run up and down the data center is if there's flames and we need to go with a fire extinguisher, right? And so the system will automatically maintain replicas of data. And if we lose a machine or lose a disk, we'll just go, if we know it's not going to come back, we'll just grow another copy of the data on some other machine to get back up to whatever replica count we feel comfortable with. So and all of that's done automatically.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's cool stuff.
So let me ask you a little bit more about Dallas, because that was such a huge announcement.
Yep.
And it's actually something we had talked about last year in the terms of how does one discover services, right? And so what does Dallas offer for developers specifically?
So for developers, how can they create new experiences with data? And for me, the stunning thing is if you just think about how this can be transformative. I was talking to someone at an internal conference at Microsoft a couple weeks ago about, and they happen to be from the Xbox world, right? And I was describing Dallas, and they stopped me and said, oh, I get it. Some games nowadays have real-time data in the games. Mm-hmm. So, for example, someone just told me today, Flight Simulator, it'll actually show the real weather conditions for wherever you're flying into. And so imagine, and I don't know what we had to go through to work that arrangement for Flight Simulator, but imagine as any developer, you could get real-time weather information, you get other sorts of things in a very easy way and just integrate it into your solution. If you're into BI, whether you're the thing I showed today around being able to just, in four mouse clicks, go from a very interesting reference data set to having it into a power pivot solution, it just takes so much friction out of it. And it allows you to discover it. How do I go search for this data? Is it out there? And how do I bring it in and then make use of it?
Totally. So. And now one of the things that seems compelling about Azure in general is a business model that you build around building services.
Yeah.
In the sense of, so how could I actually take advantage of Dallas to say, here's my look on data, because data is everywhere. You're going to talk about that in an excellent talk. But talk to me about what business.
So the interesting thing, so how can one add value? So if I get sort of MBA-ish for just a second.
Sure.
There are whole value chains that are getting reconfigured. Okay, and there's so much interesting business model, new business models and such. So imagine I can take a reference data source that I know how to acquire and use, and I can mix into it and mash it up with my own data and then produce something new and unique. So think of these data mashups. So I want to have a little application. Show me all movies playing with in the next 30 to 60 minutes that have seats that are within 5 miles of where I am right now.
Nice.
Now, if you think about the various, so people, I think if they could get their hands on the data, could envision what it would mean for that app. And people can sit here and think about, hey, that'd be a cool app. I'd like to have that.
Absolutely.
So the point here is that we see this service space as being more than about, I'm moving a VM from here to there. It's what are the new experiences? So as developers, and how do I reach people, and what are the network effects and the virtuous cycles that we can start to spin up? And finally, the last thing I think is really, really cool about Dallas is that it's a great example of, and if I just, talk a little out of school, we were talking about software plus services a couple years ago, right?
Oh, yes.
And it turns out that was the right thing, but people were scratching their head until we got it figured out. So Dallas is a great example, because if you look at it today, The WPF app that I showed is a great, rich experience. It's a great experience on the PC. Mm-hmm. And it's making use of this data in the cloud that it was really, really easy for me to get my hands on. If you think about that BI solution, Excel and Power Pivot's a great way to slice and dice. And with Power Pivot, you know, 100 million rows, not a challenge. But where do I go and get it? And the cloud is a great way for me to go and get that and bring it in. So
absolutely,
it really is a great example of, you know, how services can transform how we think about these things and the opportunity. So I think for people who are listening, the thing I challenge you with is don't think about it as, look at, can I move something up there and run it a little bit cheaper? But what are the new possibilities here by being able to connect these things up?
Amazing. So we have some more questions from people out there. Is it safe to use Azure for HIPAA, HIPAA-compliant apps?
HIPAA. So that is a very interesting challenge. In fact, as I leave here mm-hmm. in 5 minutes, I'm going to go and do a breakout session and talk about that. That is one of the challenges in terms of what degree of trust. And in particular, so I'd say the cloud is a great environment for collaboration, even for business scenarios. The challenge we face is that there are a number of collaboration cases. We want to have a controlled trust arrangement. So think of cases where you have several companies that want to collaborate for a single scenario, but in fact compete in other worlds. Mm. So how do we set up a controlled trust arrangement for that scenario? And so we're thinking about the tech, if you will, to go do that. But then there are lots of policy implications for things like HIPAA and PCI and such. And so, you know, we'll work through the certification and such later on. But sure. That is something that we're looking at.
Very timely question.
Yep.
So Ashan says, do you know if the on-premise velocity can sync with the cloud velocity? Velocity being the in-memory cache.
Yeah,
right?
And by sync, I'll take it sync literally in terms of synchronize.
Okay.
Not right now. But that is something that, and someone may correct me, I'm pretty sure we're not doing that right now, but that is clearly an interesting scenario.
Absolutely. So. Good question. So let's talk a little bit about, you're in the technical leaders track, you're going to do a talk, your very nice title, Terabytes for Peanuts, Computation for Free, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So what's going on? There's so much data everywhere. Now, Dallas is a good example of taking it and making it understandable.
Yep.
There's a lot more to do.
So here's the thing. I was talking to a large business customer a couple months ago, and they were talking about their data warehousing needs, and they were talking about terabytes and blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay. And I actually asked them, I said, do you want to have like a mind-melting discussion around data warehouses? And these folks were in the health in the large. And I said, okay. So I said, tell me about all of the things that you could get your hands on for this large-scale data warehouse. And they started to go through things and such, and finally they said, and we have ambulances that we've got, you know, telemetry from. And I said, okay, so you have GPS telemetry from these ambulances. Said, yeah. And I said, did you think about bringing that into your data warehouse? And they looked at me like, huh? And it's because part of the challenge in data warehouses, the data is like, what 90% of the data can I get my hands on do I throw out? Because I can't put it all in the model, right? Mm. And I said, so imagine a world whereby you could actually retain that data and make use of it at petabyte scale. Mm. Imagine you could actually figure out how long it takes you to get to a certain location at various times a day. Imagine you could optimize the location of various ambulances and then correlate response time with patient outcome. And they just looked at it like, you know, yeah, we understand how powerful that could be, but how could we do that? Mm. And so the idea, and some of the things I'll touch on in this talk tomorrow, is that we have the ability now to process petabyte scale data and then reduce it into a form for subsequent analysis. And we are doing it within Microsoft, and others are doing it as well. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. And it is really revolutionary when you can actually, and we're processing multiple petabytes of data in bounded time and actually making use of it.
And so, of course, this is means, I mean, it's concurrent. I mean, it's parallelizing
it's
chunks of data.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk to you about that because SQL Server has always been, you know, you have the rocket science going on in the engine.
Yep.
You guys do very well at scaling across, you know, multiple processors. Mm-hmm. But what about in the world that we're heading into now? I mean, what are you thinking about as we go forward?
Great question.
A technical fellow, when you look at the map of hardware.
That's a great question. So it's an interesting thing that's gone on here. So you've got the MapReduce folks and the folks coming up from there. And they said, well, this database stuff's not useful for us. We're going to throw it out. And frankly, you get some database guys who are like, hey, those guys are doing stuff we invented 20 years ago. And the thing is like this. There's a set of things that we've learned in the database space over several decades that are useful in this new world. And we also have to teach the database guys that, no, we don't want to just do an ETL job to put the petabytes into SQL Server. And how do we bring these worlds together? And I suspect I saw Eric Meyer walk by in his lab coat. And so Eric's working on our team. And so how do we actually bring the power of computation, the expressiveness that we have in Link, and without having the programmer have to figure out that this thing is actually going to run over hundreds or thousands of machines, be able to just express a query that can be parallelized over this. And it also fits into an incubation that we started a few years ago, the Stream Insight thing, around event-based sort of. And what I had this insight a couple years ago that events are interesting, but quite often they get written to disk. Mm. And we want to do historical analysis on audit intrusion logs, that sort of stuff. And so we have the Stream Insight engine inside Microsoft running over, order 1,000 node clusters, doing these pretty interesting correlations. That's just a different form of query processing. So these worlds are going to come together here, and that's one of the things we're working on.
Now, one of the things, because it is data, it's stored on disk typically. Yep. That's sort of the bottleneck, right? The I/O. Yeah. You could have a machine with 1,000 cores, but you still have I/O restrictions, so you can only go so fast. How are you thinking about?
That's a good question. So, parallelism is a beautiful thing. I mean, if you can parallelize over lots of things,
the big room is closing for a short break to set up for tonight's reception.
Intriguing, Captain.
Uh-huh.
So I guess we are out of time, but we can keep... Nice.
See you tonight.
Whoa. And he was just about to tell us the meaning of everything.
That was it.
Unbelievable.
You meet you next time, Charles.
Hey, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey,
always
pleasure.
Great to talk to you.
Good chatting with you.
Take care and enjoy your talk.
All right.